Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 227 event, which takes place in Los Angeles, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley won 1.85 units for UFC on Fox 30 with his free bet on Islam Makhachev by inside the distance prop. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available on MMAOddsBreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 227 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, FX, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Marlon Vera, who is 10-5-1, and Wuliji Buren, who is 10-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Vera opened minus 230, the comeback on Buren at plus 170. Right now, looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Always make sure to give those guys some love. Over at BetDSI right now, it's Vera minus 620. The comeback on Buren is at plus 420. So needless to say, that minus 230 was a tough opening spot, way too low, and it did get pounded up to the minus 620 price right now that you're seeing. Across the Don Best screen, I'm looking at some 550s out there as well. So you're seeing the market price between 550 and 600, hefty favorite. And it's hard to argue that. I know that, Marlon Vera isn't the type of fighter that we expect to be a 600 favorite very often. But based on his recent performances and his improvements along the way and the matchup here against Buren, that's exactly why you're seeing it. I mean, this is a huge step down in competition for Vera. He is stepping in on short notice, but honestly, this is a really good matchup for him. I think the only way he could lose this fight is if he lets Buren control the tempo, get some takedowns, and just kind of dictate the pace of the fight. I don't think Buren is much of a threat. I don't think he finishes Vera on the ground. I don't think he finishes Vera on the feet either. So he's going to have to just basically outpoint Vera to get the W here. I think Vera is going to be a lot more of a threat. He's going to be the one that's going to be landing more on the feet. He's going to be a little bit longer, obviously, as well. He's got a slight inch or two reach advantage, but it's going to actually seem a little bit more the way he utilizes his striking skill against Buren. And then, of course, even on the ground, if he's on his back, I think his jiu-jitsu game is going to be enough to give Buren some fits. So regardless of where this fight takes place, you're seeing Vera at a significant line right now because he's rightfully a solid favorite. So I'd be surprised if Buren pulls this upset off. Like I said, for me, it's a huge step up for Buren in competition here, and it's a big drop down for Vera. So that's why you're seeing everybody bet Vera up. I think he does get the win. I mean, the line probably right now is a tad bit high. I can say that, but overall, he should be a solid favorite in this matchup. So the pick is Vera to get back on track and get another W.
And I don't even think the line's that high. Even though Vera is a massive favorite, he is by far the significantly superior striker, and he has a way better ground game than Buren. I mean, the only thing Buren has is a better wrestling game. He can take Vera down potentially, but that didn't help him against Rolando D, a guy that doesn't really have that good a takedown defense. But D was still able to get back to his feet and then just beat up on Buren on the feet. So Vera is a better, I think as good, if not better striker than D. And then on the ground, Vera has lethal game off of his back. I mean, just a tremendous triangle chokes. So if Buren takes this fight to the floor, he's going to get tapped out. And if he stays on the feet, he's going to get knocked out. I think that this is one of the most one-sided matchups on the entire card. You do have to remember Buren was supposed to face Bular, I think, a guy that was also terrible in his UFC debut out of India. And so Buren was supposed to be fighting somebody on his level, and when Bular dropped out, now Vera stepping in and is just going to blow him out of the water. This is the biggest, most one-sided matchup on the entire card, in my opinion. And Vera should win handily. Now, dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Danielle Taylor, who is 9-3, taking on Wiley Zhang, who is 16-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Zhang opened -245, the comeback on Taylor at +175. Right now, looking over to BetDSI, it's -260 for Zhang and the comeback on Taylor +210. So the opening line was pretty solid. Looks like a little bit of two-way action coming in, more so on Zhang. Surprisingly, because it's tough to gauge where Zhang is. She's making her UFC debut, of course, against a very solid fighter in Danielle Taylor. Unfortunately for Taylor, it's her size that really impacts her more than anything else. I mean, I think she's a pretty good fighter. It's just she should be fighting more so at probably 105 pounds rather than 115 pounds in this spot because, you know, she's not a very tall fighter. But I'll tell you what, she's physically powerful. She's a little spark plug. She definitely has some, you know, some zap in her punches, and she can have effective striking because of that power. Also has decent wrestling, decent takedown defense as well. And she's faced decent competition. I mean, she has solid wins so far in her UFC career, although she's suffering a decision loss to the hands of JJ Aldrich in her last fight. But again, JJ Aldrich's length, her aggression, the pace that she pushed was just a little bit too much for Taylor in that spot. So Zhang's aggression can actually mirror that of JJ Aldridge's in a different way though, because Zhang is a very aggressive fighter. Now, overall, she's faced okay competition compared to, you know, considering a lot of times outside of the UFC, you see a lot of these fighters that come from Zhang's region, maybe not get the level of competition you'd like to see. So inflated resumes a lot of times are inflated records. I think Zhang has a little bit of that, but she's faced some live bodies over there as well. So Zhang's a very aggressive fighter. She's a champion. She has a well-rounded skill set. She has some kickboxing experience. So she has some power on the feet. She's a pretty technical striker that is aggressive, as I said, time and time again, because she does look for some takedowns once on the ground as well. She has a good jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. She excels from top position, has good ground and pound. So she's a very complete, well-rounded fighter. And I'm going to say it one more time. Her aggression is key because she's a finisher. We don't see a lot of ladies go out there and finish fights, but Zhang manages to get the job done. Now, it's not going to be easy against Taylor because Taylor's a tough, very tough fighter in her own right, and she's faced high-level competition, and it's hard to put Taylor out there. But, man, this fight is going to be nothing but fireworks, and I expect Zhang's aggression to get the job done, whether that's finishing Taylor along the way, which is a possibility, or more so winning the scorecards against Taylor. I think that's probably the way it's going to go. So I am impressed with what I've seen from Zhang, and I think she's going to make it a successful UFC debut against Taylor here.
And I'm in complete agreement. Danielle Taylor has a lot of power for her size, but I just think she's completely overmatched here. Taylor is going to be the smaller fighter. I mean, she can be fighting at 105 pounds if the UFC had the division. So she's given up about 4 inches in height. She's going to be giving up some reach. Taylor also is just not very aggressive. She is an extremely frustrating fighter if you pick her or bet on her, because she just sits back and waits and waits and waits and is trying to find those opportunistic moments to land a heavy shot. And if she doesn't land that big shot, then she usually ends up getting in close split decision losses. And I think in this type of matchup, it's going to be a lot worse than that because, as Nick mentioned, Zhang is crazy aggressive. She has a lot of power. Zhang is a legitimately talented striker. One, I think she's entering the UFC as a top 10 striker in the women's strawweight division, if not better. Like, that's how good she is. Like, she could be ranked very quickly if she puts on the type of performance in this fight that I think she can. And Taylor is tough. She can take a shot. So I think that Zhang is going to have her hands full in terms of trying to finish this fight, because she does have the ability to finish most women at 115 pounds, but Taylor can take a shot. So I think Zhang will, you're going to see her land a lot of strikes. I think you're going to see her throw a lot of strikes. And even if she doesn't finish Taylor, that aggression and the strikes thrown and everything that she'll be doing, racking up points, should be more than enough to get the job done. The only thing I'm worried about pretty much at all is the one-punch power that Taylor possesses. And if Zhang is overly aggressive and just leaves herself completely exposed, maybe Taylor can connect with that one punch and put her out. But I think that Zhang gets the job done here. I think either by knockout or a very one-sided decision. Now moving on to the Fight Pass headliner. In the flyweight division, we have Alex Perez, who is 20-4, taking on Jose Shorty Torres, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
This fight opened exactly a pick of minus 120 Perez, minus 120 Torres. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing Perez at minus 135. The comeback on Torres is at plus 105. So a little bit more action coming in Perez's way. This should be a great fight. I mean, you have two of the best 125-pounders that the UFC recently brought in. And I think both these guys are going to make a stake at one point or another to a title run, really. I mean, these guys are definitely trending in that direction. So matching these guys up this early in their career is something else. And of course, Perez, I should get into him right away first, since he is a slight favorite in this matchup. Man, I've been nothing but impressed. If you look back at his footage and look at his improvements throughout his career, the guy is a very complete fighter. His wrestling is sound, his striking ability sound. He's got really good boxing, pushes a high pace. His out wrestling Shelton in his last matchup, was pretty impressive, because Shelton on the ground could do some good things. So Perez controlling Shelton, dropping some good ground and pound and pushing that tempo in that fight was very impressive. He won a clear decision win, and I thought that was going to be a very difficult test for Perez, but he passed it with flying colors. Now Torres, on the other hand, as well, man, this guy should have been in the UFC a long time ago. I mean, he's got multiple titles in different organizations before he came to the UFC. His resume is not padded by any means. This guy is a tested, proven veteran, still at age 26 before he even made the UFC. I mean, both these guys, you could say the same thing with Perez, but Torres has been a little bit more in the spotlight because he's been fighting in leagues like the World Series of Fighting, or I should say Titan, rather, not the World Series of Fighting, but he's been on Titan FC cards. He was their champion, of course, multiple division champion. So that's how talented this guy is. So Shorty Torres, man, I mean, he's definitely a special talent, but he had his hands full with Jared Brooks in his last fight. And if Jared Brooks did not knock himself out getting that slam, I believe Jared Brooks probably would have got the job done and edged out a decision win over Torres, and he would have suffered his first loss. So that gets a little bit interesting, but it is what it is, and Torres got the W. And it seems when Torres is in trouble in fights, he always manages to find a way to get the job done and get the win. He's a winner. I mean, that's all you could say. Of course, he has great training partners. He's been putting a lot of time in with TJ Dillashaw, which is obviously headlining this card as well. I mean, he looks up to TJ, and obviously he tries to, you know, copy the fighting style and get a lot of ideas and improvements to his game from Dillashaw as well. So there's a lot to absorb there for Torres, and I think this is going to be fireworks. The problem with me picking Torres in this fight is his wrestling defense. I mean, it wasn't just his last fight against Jared Brooks. I mean, if you look in the past, Torres has been taken down. He has been controlled at times by better wrestlers, and Perez is just that. He is the better wrestler in this matchup. I think his takedowns are going to have success, and he'll probably do enough to control Torres here. On the feet, I actually think Torres has a little bit of an advantage. Now, I think Perez is a little bit more defensively sound, but I think Torres offensively can land a little bit more frequently and kind of break through that solid defense of Perez, because he does have a little bit more punching power, I think, on the feet, and he is a little bit more dangerous as well. So Torres is going to have to stay off his back. He's going to have to keep his space, and he's going to have to land those hard shots in order to beat Perez, and even on the scorecards or possibly inside the distance here. And I think it's going to be a tough task for him. So I'm slightly leaning Perez's way as well. I think he just basically controls the tempo of this fight, mixes in those takedowns, and edges out a close competitive decision fight over Torres. So the pick is Perez, but it should be a good fight.
And I'm in agreement. This is a very underrated fight on this card. Both of these guys are extremely talented. I mean, Torres was one of the best flyweights that wasn't in the UFC yet, being a multi-league champion at both bantamweight and flyweight. Flyweight, he is a very talented fighter. And I think that he's a lot better than we saw in his UFC debut, where he kind of got lucky with his opponent knocking himself out on a takedown. Torres did take that fight on short notice, had a tough weight cut. This time around, he's going to have full training camp, and I think you're going to see the best of Jose Torres. But that being said, Alex Perez is a tremendous wrestler, and Torres has historically not had good takedown defense. So basically, I think Perez is a decent striker, and can hold his own with Torres, although Torres should get the better of the stand-up exchanges if they stay extended. But at some point, Perez is going to be shooting in for takedowns, and he is going to be putting Torres on his back. And if he can keep him there, I think Perez has a tremendous opportunity to win this fight. As long as he doesn't knock himself out, and as long as he doesn't leave his neck or an arm exposed and open to, you know, some kind of submission attempt. Torres isn't exactly a great submission artist, so I'm not super worried about that, but Torres is opportunistic, so he could pull something off. But for the most part, I just think that this fight boils down to Torres not having great takedown defense, even though he is extremely talented, and Perez having pretty good takedown offense and pretty solid overall top control. So I think Perez gets the job done. I think he puts Torres on his back. I think he hands him his first professional loss. So my pick is going to be Alex Perez. Now, kicking off the FX prelims, we have Matt Sales in the featherweight division, who is 6-1, taking on Shaman Moraes, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Moraes opened -125, the comeback on Sales at -115. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Moraes -115. Sales is -115. So exactly a pick-em type of fight. Line did flip early on, and it was Sales the favorite. So it'll go back and forth, and I'm sure we'll continue to see two-way action coming in this fight. So a pretty fair opening line set here in this spot. And I think it'll, like I said, it'll continue to kind of see two-way action here because you have a striker versus striker matchup. I mean, both of these guys, make no mistake about it, they know what they're good at or where they excel at the most, and they love to stand and bang and they love to knock people out. So we're going to see a fun fight here, especially Sales. I mean, that's what he likes to do best. He does have a bit of a wrestling background, but he almost uses his wrestling in reverse to keep the fight upright so he can knock his opponents out. And this matchup though against Moraes, he has to be careful, man, because I'll tell you what, Moraes is a really good striker in his own right. In fact, he's a bit underrated. I know that Moraes has suffered a couple losses in his career, but they've been to great competition. I mean, that 9-2 resume, his losses are against Zabit in his last fight, and we all know what kind of prospect Zabit is, I should say. Pardon my pronunciation there. And then, of course, Marlon Moraes, he lost in the World Series of Fighting before that. So those are his two losses. You're talking about two of the best fighters around the weight class, you know, at 145 pounds or so. So this is definitely a fight that Moraes can open up some eyes and get back to the right side of things as far as the fans go and get that respect back that he deserves, because Sale is getting a lot of that respect. Of course, he's coming off of an impressive knockout win. Sales is from the Contender Series matchup that he recently had as well, which wasn't a surprise. I mean, the surprising part was how easy he dominated that fight because he was facing a pretty decent striker in that aspect. So that tells you what kind of power, knockout power Sales has. So this is going to be, like I said, striker versus striker matchup. Both these guys have more than just striking, but they're going to want to stand and bang. I think if it goes to the ground, Race probably has the overall grappling advantage, and he will try to get position and try to you know, look for submission or some ground and pound on the ground as well. Whereas Sales will actually look to stand back up, and if it does play out on the ground a little bit and try to knock him out. Sales does have big power in that right hand, and I think he's going to look to target Moraes' chin for sure in this spot. But it isn't going to be easy. I think Moraes is actually the better fighter overall in this spot here. I think, again, it's going to prove throughout this fight. I think since it is a striker versus striker matchup and Moraes had a little bit of length, that's going to fare well for him in this spot here. Defensively, I think Moraes has a little bit better defense on the feet as well. I do see Sales at times when he's throwing those big punches that he leaves himself exposed, and I think Moraes could capitalize on that as well. So it should be a great fight. It could go either way. It should be fireworks for sure. But I'm siding with Moraes a little bit more. I think who he's fought more recently, and people are kind of underestimating him in some ways because I think that his losses, again, are to solid competition, and I have seen the progression in this game and the improvements that he's made, and I'm a fan of his work for sure. So I think this should be, like I said, an awesome fight, but I'm going to pick Moraes to get the W here.
And I'm going to go with Moraes as well. I just really think that he is a very talented striker, and this is probably going to be a striker versus striker matchup. Now, obviously, Sales is a very aggressive striker. He has a lot of power. He has, like, confidence. So I expect that Sales is going to be pushing the pace and trying to make Moraes fight off the back foot and trying to knock Moraes' head off. The main thing you got to remember here is Moraes, even though he has two losses, those two losses are to two of the best prospects in the UFC in terms of Zabit Magomedsharipov and Marlon Moraes. I mean, two guys that are legit top 10, potentially top 5 fighters, both of them. So I think that Moraes definitely is a lot better than what we saw in the, especially in the Sharipov fight in his UFC debut when, you know, he just wasn't competitive, very competitive. Against Sales, he only really has to worry about the striking. And Moraes is a very talented striker in his own right. I think he is the more technical striker. He's longer. He's got 4 inches in reach. He's a little bit taller. So, if Moraes is able to make this more of a technical battle, then he should have the edge. If he's able to land good jabs, he'll have the edge. If he could stay on the outside, he'll have the edge. Or if he can effectively counter when Sales is being aggressive, he'll have the edge. It just all boils down to whether or not Sales can put up enough pressure on Moraes that he could either make him wilt or just repeatedly get inside and fluster Moraes. Because, you know, you can be a very technical striker, but if somebody is repeatedly getting inside and cracking you on the jaw, then it doesn't really matter that much if you can't keep somebody at the end of your punches and use your reach advantage. So that's how this fight is really going to boil down to. I don't think it goes to the ground unless somebody gets knocked down. I do think that with Moraes being the better striker, that I do expect him to keep Sales at the end of his punches. So I do think that Moraes can at least win a decision here. He might even surprise us and knock Sales out if Sales leaves too many openings with his aggression. So my pick is going to be shame on Moraes. Now, moving on to the bantamweight division, we have Ricardo Ramos, who is 11-1, taking on Kyung Ho Kang, who is 13-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Hamos opened -245, the comeback on Kang +175. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Hamos actually -215, the comeback on Kang +175. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. It's a pretty solid opener here as well. A good fight, man. I'll tell you what, they're not giving Hamos any breaks here. I mean, he's definitely a rising prospect at age 23, and his skill set is something special. So he can definitely make a run towards the bantamweight title. So I understand why they're matching him up like this. I mean, his UFC debut against Tanaka and him coming out with a win, his win over Zahabi last fight as well was not an easy one. And now they're giving him Kang, which I think Kang is extremely underrated in the UFC bantamweight division. Very solid fighter. So Hamos coming in here, getting 3 wins in a row to start off his UFC career over the level of competition is going to be something special for sure. It's not going to be easy though against Kang, because Kang does present a lot of problems. I mean, in most cases, Kang is a very complete fighter. We all know that. He's got good conditioning. He's the type of fighter that is able to outgrind his opponents. He actually has okay stand-up. And I'm saying okay stand-up because offensively he's not bad. It's just defensively sometimes where it is a bit of a concern for him. But he is such a good fighter. And again, you don't have to worry about him coming to fight or him being in shape or anything like that. So you get a solid performance from Kang every time out. And that's going to be another one here. He's going to look to close a gap here against Hamos. He's going to look to take this fight to the ground and do what he does best. And that's control. That's utilize his fine grappling skill on the ground as well. But it's not going to be that easy. I mean, Hamos has showed some improvements. I know that Hamos had a setback, you know, in not too long ago against Manny Vasquez and Legacy Fighting, actually, where Manny Vasquez was able to hop on his back pretty early in that fight and get the job done. There was a lot of circumstances surrounding that. I mean, Hamos was a bit nervous. I know Dana White was there watching, and he was actually there to watch Hamos and to sign him to a contract with a W there. So it kind of backfired, and he didn't get the win. So a little bit of pressure there, but he backed that up. After that, he ended up obviously getting in front of Dana White, and Dana White was impressed with what he saw, and he got the W there. So what I'm trying to say is that Manny Vasquez loss, I'll give him a little bit of a break there. Although it did show us a sign of defensive liability in Ramos's game, if you could take his back possibly. But again, Manny Vasquez has a really good jiu-jitsu game in his own right. So with him on your back, and more times than not, it's a wrap anyway. So I'm going to let that slide with Ramos, because what we've seen since then has been really some awesome performances. And this is going to be another one here. So Ramos is going to want to stay off his back. He's going to want to avoid you know, getting laid and preyed on by Kang or getting outgrinded by Kang. And I think he'll be able to do that. He's not an easy guy to hold down. He'll probably be able to scramble back to his feet and even maintain top position at times. I think this is the type of fight that's going to play out in every aspect of MMA. Like, I think both guys will end up getting top position on the ground at some point. I think we're going to see some scrambles, some reversals. I think on the feet is where Ramos is going to have the biggest edge, though. I think he is definitely the better striker. I think he is going to be the more effective striker as well, has a little bit more power in his punches. Defensively, I think he's a little bit better than Kang as well. So I do side with Ramos in this fight. I think that he's just a little bit better in every aspect of the game, but this is going to be a tough, tough test. So to me, where the price is right now, I wouldn't lay the price. I would not lay 2-1 over a guy like Kang right now until we see Ramos pass this test and realize that he is ready for the next tier of fighters. So I think it's a dog or pass situation, but for pure skill set, I have to go with Ramos because I do think that he is, again, the more complete fighter, and I've been impressed with his improvements, and I think that he has enough of a skill set here to get the job done against King. So should be another impressive win. I'm going to pick Ramos to get the job done.
And I do expect Ramos to be the better striker here. He might even, he probably does have a little bit better of a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu submission game, but against Kang, even though they're about the same size in terms of height and reach, I just think Kang is very physically strong for the division. He was always a guy that cut a lot of weight. I think that he's probably a little bit more filled out here. He's going to be a very difficult fighter to scramble with. Now, if this stays standing, Ramos should definitely win. If it goes to the floor, though, I think Kang has a very good chance to pull off the upset here. Kang is a very talented wrestler. He is an exceptional scrambler. He is a very entertaining fighter once this fight hits the canvas. And if it does hit the canvas, even though Ramos is a talented Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu artist, I think he's in trouble. I don't know if Kang would submit him, but I do think Kang can secure top position. And when Ramos starts to scramble away, I think Kang will win those scrambles and again get back to top position. So I think this fight's going to be competitive, but and Ramos should get the edge on the feet because Kang just isn't that great of a striker. But the second this goes to the floor, I think it becomes a very interesting and compelling matchup. And I see Kang winning those scrambles, and I think that he can win at least 2 out of 3 rounds with his groundwork. So I'm going to side with the underdog here in Kyung-Ho Kang. Now, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Ricky Simon, who is 10-1, taking on Montel Jackson, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Simon open -175, Jackson +145, looking over at BetDSI right now. It is actually Simon at the underdog. So Jackson is coming in at -120. Simon is at -110. So the line did flip early action coming in on Jackson. It settled to pick him and it was kind of bouncing back and forth for a little while. Now we're seeing Jackson as a -120 favorite. So basically a pick him with a slight lean towards Jackson here in this spot. That tells you how much respect Jackson's getting. I mean, Simon is a very, very talented fighter. I mean, we've seen that time and time again so far in what I think has been a very short stint in the public eye for Simon. I mean, you know, obviously he's coming off of some impressive victories in LFA. He was on the Dana White Contender Series earlier last year as well. So he's been, like I said, a very short stint in the public eye, but all those performances have been very solid against very good competition as well. And then in his last fight, I mean, what could you say? That was craziness that took place, but he got the job done against Merab in his last fight with a very controversial finish at the end of round 3. He was probably on his way to losing that fight, but it was competitive, really competitive against another solid fighter. So Simon has not had any bad performances, and he's faced very stiff competition. So that's something to be impressed with. I mean, the guy has a really good wrestling background. He has outstanding striking to go along with it. He's got good fight IQ, good conditioning. The guy has power. I mean, everything. He's a very complete MMA fighter. The problem with Simon is, in my opinion, defensively at times, he does leave himself exposed. He can get clipped. He does get rocked in fights, and that changes the complexion of fights. I mean, that submission loss that he has was because he got tagged and he got rocked before that. And then we've seen him in other fights as well get tagged and rocked. Now, he hasn't been knocked out by that, but it does start changing the complexion of the fight. And he's facing another guy in Jackson that can actually match him in a lot of areas of this fight. I mean, I was just bragging about how good of an overall complete fighter Simon is. Jackson, you could say a lot of the same things about. Mine is the experience edge. I mean, that's where I think Simon has the biggest advantage in this position here is the competition level that he's faced and the amount of fights that he's had over high caliber competition in comparison to Jackson. But make no mistake at all, Jackson's a very solid fighter. He's faced decent competition. I'm not saying he's faced all bums so far, but in comparison to resumes, Simon's obviously trumps Jackson. But to this point, I mean, Jackson has a wrestling background in his own right, very strong wrestling background. He's going to be the taller fighter. He's going to be the longer fighter here. So that's interesting as well, because I think Jackson can be the more effective striker in this spot against Simon. So I expect this fight to be another fight that's fireworks. I think we could see it going back and forth, but how I think it's going to play out, I think it's going to be a competitive fight that will have either guy winning at a certain point, but Jackson's power is going to be the one that ultimately pulls through here and shows when he rocks Simon. I mean, it could be a toss-up type of fight where all of a sudden one punch gets through and Simon gets rocked, and that swings the whole round for Jackson is what I'm trying to spit out of my mouth here in this spot. So I think Jackson is just a little bit of a higher level prospect at this point. I mean, both these guys, again, sky's the limit for them, and I'm expecting good things for them at 135 pounds, but a tough matchup. I still think I like what I see from Jackson a little bit better, even though he's a little bit less unproven at this point. I think this will be a very solid win for him. And I think, again, his skill set, his attributes, the potential that Jackson has in this short time just trumps what I've seen from Simon overall, in my opinion. And I think that it'll be definitely a good win for him if he can get the job done here. So the pick is Jackson to beat a very game Simon in what should be a very competitive fight. But I have to lean toward Jackson. I just, like I said, I think he has more potential. And man, I'd like to see where this guy can go if he does get a win over Simon and how they're going to match him next, because I think this guy can make a run potentially towards a bantamweight title. So the pick is Montel Jackson for me.
And I can understand the pick of Jackson. He is a talented fighter with a lot of promise, but we just haven't seen him tested that much yet. So far, he's been in there and taken care of business pretty quickly against people that just weren't that talented. This is by far the toughest fight of his career. I mean, Ricky Simon has been in there. He competed on the Tuesday Night Contender Series. He won his fight, didn't get onto the show from that, had to go back and win an LFA championship fight. So, you know, this guy has been in there through the ringer against tough opponents after tough opponents, and he's come out the better end of it. Simon has, in my opinion, the better takedowns. I think he has the more experienced and well-rounded ground game overall. I think he is capable of getting a submission if need be. He is a good enough striker to hold his own with Jackson, although I do think Jackson has a little bit more power and might be a little quicker. So I do think Jackson is a tremendous prospect, but I think this is a little bit too much too soon for him making his UFC debut here. So I think that Simon gets the job done. I think that the experience will be a huge factor. The fact that Simon, there's not much that Jackson's going to offer that he hasn't seen yet, that Simon hasn't seen yet. So I think Simon just picks up some takedowns. I think he holds his own on the feet enough, and I think that he just outworks Jackson over the course of three rounds using his full MMA arsenal and gets the win probably by decision. So my pick is going to be Ricky Simon. Now moving on to the preliminary card headliner in the bantamweight division. Again, we have Pedro Munhoz, who is 15-3 with one no contest, taking on Brett Johns, who is 15-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open and how has the public shifted things so far?
Munhoz opened -155, Johns +115. Right now over at BetDSI, Munhoz got bet up all the way up to -230. The comeback on Johns is +190. I don't necessarily agree with the early action coming in his way. I mean, it's been pretty steady. It's amazing how people just, you lose a fight and people just kind of throw you away like you're a piece of trash, it seems like. And Johns is not that. I mean, stylistically, the Aljamain Sterling fight now, especially after it was done, we all know that it was just a tough matchup. I mean, hats off to Sterling for winning that fight as clear as he did. I didn't think it was going to be that easy, honestly. I thought that Johns had a good chance to win that fight. But matchups are everything. And Sterling obviously matched up really well against Johns. This matchup with Munoz, though, on the other hand, is a completely different matchup. I don't think Johns is going to have to worry about Munoz's wrestling or his grinding ability as he did against Sterling in this spot. I think he's going to have to worry about the submission game of Munoz. If he sticks his neck into that guillotine choke Munoz is famous for, then he could be in some serious trouble. Or on the feet, I think Munoz's speed and his technical ability to strike on the feet could cause some problems for Johns as well. But overall, I think Johns is going to be the one pushing a higher pace. I think he's going to have the wrestling advantage. So this fight's going to be a lot closer than most people think. I think it's a pick 'em type of fight, to be honest with you. And again, if Johns doesn't get caught in that guillotine choke or gets submitted here, I think if he hits a scorecards, he could actually pull off a win here. So to me, I've been going back and forth on this fight, believe it or not. And although Munoz is the better finisher in this spot, I still think if Johns can survive, he probably gets a scorecards here. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And actually, I will pick Johns to get the win here, because I think, again, he's going to be aware Munoz has that guillotine choke. He's not going to want to stick his neck in there. Hopefully his fight IQ, what I'm saying right now, comes into play and he doesn't get himself in a bad spot, because if he does not, I think if he hits the scorecards, he probably edges out the win here. So probably not a popular pick, but I'm going to have to go with what I think is going to play out here. And I think Brett Johns is going to pull off the upset win by decision over Pedro Munoz here in this spot. So the pick is Johns.
And while I do think the value is on Johns, I'm going to side with Munoz. I mean, he is by far the better finisher. He's the more active and aggressive striker. And Munoz has a much better finishing ability on the ground in terms of submissions. If Johns does shoot in for takedowns, I think that he will be potentially exposed to a very lethal guillotine choke that Munoz possesses. And Munoz might be able to just out-scramble or sweep or do something with that ground game that he does have. And on the feet, while Johns has shown a pretty decent striking ability, which allows him to close the distance and set up takedowns, he kind of got exposed a little bit in that last fight against Aljamain Sterling. Sterling outlanded Johns on the feet, or at least in terms of striking, 3-1. Granted, Sterling also got takedowns in that fight and got top position and passed Johns' guard a little bit. So this time around, I think that while Johns is a good striker, I think that Munoz being more aggressive and active can overcome that. So I'm going to side with Pedro Munoz here. I think that he could potentially submit Johns on the ground, and I think that he could outwork Johns on the feet and earn a decision at least. So my pick is going to be Pedro Munoz. Now, kicking off the main card in the middleweight division for the pay-per-view, we have Thiago Santos, who is 17-5, taking on Kevin Holland, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Santos opened -275, the comeback on Holland at +215. Right now we're looking over at BetDSI, and it's currently Santos coming in at -410, the comeback on Holland at +310. So needless to say, people bet Santos up against Holland here in this spot. Man, I don't know if that's a smart idea either. I know that Santos is a beast. I know that people have a ton of respect for him, and he's one of the most devastating strikers at 185 pounds. I mean, offensively, man, I mean, look at the wins that he has. I know Anthony Smith is on a rise right now. A lot of people, especially since he moved up the light heavyweight division, a lot of people are thinking that he's the next big thing. I'll tell you what, Santos destroyed the next big thing in the middleweight division. So that tells you what kind of striking ability Santos has in this spot here. But that being said, he did suffer a pretty bad beat. And I'm saying a bad beat because the way Branch just destroyed him in the last fight was kind of a head scratcher. So that's the thing with me and Santos. He's a little bit inconsistent. I mean, he went on a nice, I believe, 4-fight win streak before that Branch loss. But before that, he gets choked out by Spicely, which is a fight. Honestly, we all know that Spicely's better on the ground, but come on. You're going to let Spicely take you down and you know, and get that submission win, even if, or let him rock you, whatever. Here's the thing with Santos as well. I should say it right away. His chin is horrific at times. I mean, that is definitely one scary situation that you have to deal with Santos. And that's, again, it affected him in his last fight against Branch. But offensively, the guy, again, with his physique, with his power, with his knockout potential, the guy is a monster to deal with. So Holland is going to have his hands full for sure. But at the price of 4-1, that's ridiculous. There's no way. I mean, I wouldn't trust that chin of Santos to lay that chalk in any fight right now in the middleweight division. There's no possible way. So that said, I do like what I see from Holland. I think he is the younger, obviously, prospect. He's going to be, I believe, 9 years younger than Santos. He has a lot of striking ability in his own right. He doesn't have the pure power Santos has, but I think he has better movement. I think he has a little bit more speed. I think he does have a much better ground game overall as a whole. Now, it's not going to be easy to take Santos down, because at times we've seen Santos's takedown defense hold up, and he's made life miserable for people trying to take him down. But some people have had success doing so. And once they do get him on the ground, I think there's a big discrepancy. And I think Holland is going to actually have his way with Santos and possibly ground and pound finish or submit Santos on the ground as well. So there's a few paths to victory here for a guy like Holland. It doesn't have to be on the ground, because like I said, his striking is good enough where maybe he could find an opening, maybe he can find a counter and touch that chin of Santos and put him out. Or maybe during a scramble or during some kind of flurry, they find themselves, you know, caught up on the ground and Holland gets the job done there as well. Do not lay 4-1 on Santos in this fight. I don't care if Santos goes out there and knocks out Holland in 30 seconds. You guys can tell me whatever you want to say, but you know what? Still do not lay 4-1 in this spot. A guy coming off of a knockout loss over an up-and-coming prospect in the middleweight division like Holland. Do not do it. I'm going to pick Santos to win because I think his strength and power, and again, he's a little bit ahead of Holland right now, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Holland pulls off this upset win here. In fact, the matchmaking here, to me, points out the fact that Holland could possibly get this W here over Santos. I mean, the UFC's not matching Santos up with a cupcake here, put it that way. So Holland definitely has more upside at this point, I think, especially if he gets a solid win over a guy like Santos. So the pick is Santos, but certainly not a confident one. And if you're betting this fight, it's definitely a dog or pass situation.
Thiago Santos is just a fighter that it's tough to get a read on. I mean, the guy is capable of looking like a world beater, and then he also can go out and get destroyed by people that he has no business losing to, like Eric Spicely. Santos also goes out and destroys Anthony Smith and, Jack Hermanson and Elias Theodoro. So, you know, this is a guy that is capable of being great, but also has some serious faults with, not having a very good chin, with not having a very good ground game, but offensively, he's a powerhouse. I mean, the guy is dynamic on the feet. He's powerful. He is very dangerous with both his hands and his legs, particularly his legs. He has some just tremendous and devastating kicking ability. Can finish anybody with a head kick or a body kick if he lands it well. So, you know, this is a guy that is always a threat to beat just about anybody in the top 15, but can also lose to people outside the top 15. Thus, we have this matchup in Kevin Holland, who is a talented striker, somebody that does have a bit of submission ability as well. And Holland looked pretty good when he was competing on the Tuesday Night Contender Series. Granted, he did not win by knockout. He blew his opponent out by outstriking him almost 4-1. But, I mean, he did not put him away. So if he is not able to finish Thiago Santos, it could be a big problem for him, because, Santos is not a guy that loses decisions. I mean, you either submit him or knock him out, or you lose a decision or you get knocked out. That's pretty much how it works. So, but Holland is a talented striker. He has some power. He has some submission ability. So if he can drag this to the floor, there's a chance he could submit Santos, and he could connect with something nasty on the feet and put Santos out, even though Santos is, in my opinion, by far the better striker. But Holland is a little bit bigger, actually a lot bigger. He's got about 5 inches in reach. He's got about 3 inches in height. So he's going to tower over Santos a little bit. And if he is able to use that reach a little bit and connect with something while Santos is on his way inside, then he could definitely win this fight, even though it's his UFC debut. But overall, I am going to side with Santos. I just think the experience and the devastating overall striking ability that Santos possesses might be a little bit too much to overcome for Holland, especially for a guy making his UFC debut. This is a very, very difficult UFC debut, kind of perplexing UFC debut. Usually you're matching somebody in their UFC debut against somebody a lot lower down in the rankings, and Holland is getting a top 15 opponent right off the bat. So I'm going to side with Santos. I expect him to get the job done, but again, if Holland wins, it's probably going to be by finish. Now dropping all the way down to the women's strawweight division, we have Pollyanna Viana, who is 10-1, taking on JJ Aldrich, who is 6-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Viana opened -210, the comeback on Aldrich at +160. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Viana -140, the comeback on Aldrich is at +110. So line margins have tightened up, and there's more action as of late coming in on the dog. Early on, it was going Viana's way. So this is an interesting matchup. I mean, obviously, it's on pay-per-view for a reason. I think the UFC is actually pushing Viana in the spotlight here and expecting her to get this fight to the ground and submit Aldrich. I don't know if it's going to be that easy. I mean, I like what I see from Viana. She's definitely a very marketable fighter. She has a great ground game. She's only 26 years old. She keeps on improving her overall game. Her stand-up's getting better. I think that's her weakness, though, still. I mean, if you look at the way she strikes at times, I mean, when she's aggressive and she's on the offense, it kind of hides her defensive flaws. But when a fighter is being aggressive, like Aldrich will, she's going to push a high pace and bring it. She's going to constantly be pushing forward and utilizing her striking advantage in the spot Aldrich is. Viana could have some problems here. She's going to have to look for those takedowns. And even though Viana doesn't have the greatest wrestling, she does have a pretty good takedown game, meaning as far as getting throws, getting trip takedowns, that sort of thing, hip tosses. Viana can get the fight to the ground in that regard at times, or she's pretty opportunistic where she can actually take your back even if you're not on the ground, meaning that she angles. If you just leave that slightest opening, she can angle and climb up your back and then start working her submission game. So even though a lot of people believe Viana's a very complete fighter, I think she lacks in the striking game to the point where Aldridge is going to exploit that and have a lot of success on the feet against Viana. So Viana, if she wants to win this fight, she has to get it to the ground. I think Aldridge is extremely underrated, honestly. I mean, again, people don't look at her like a dominant fighter because she's not going to go out there and just blow you away with her punching power. She's not going to go out there and just out-wrestle you and grind you out or submit you and dominate you on the ground either. Aldridge is just a very sound fighter that is tough. She brings a high pace to each fight. She pushes forward and utilizes her strength, which is striking. So I think here she's a southpaw. She's going to be fighting a little bit longer on the feet. She's going to be the one pushing a little bit more aggressive here as well. And if she keeps this fight upright, I mean, it's going to be clear to me that she's going to be the winner here, because I think Viana has a puncher's chance, but Aldrich is too tough and her striking is actually to the point where I don't think Viana's striking is going to be much of an issue at all for her. So I don't know. I find it hard to believe here that Viana's going to get the W against a fighter like Aldrich. So I do think the early action coming in was probably the right way to go. I'm going to pick Aldrich to kind of win this fight straight out. Again, I think it's Viana by sub or she loses. So I think Aldrich is okay. She's, even though she's been subbed in the past, I think her takedown defense is probably going to hold up good enough here and she's going to get the W. So the pick is Aldrich. And again, I'm looking forward to this fight because it's on pay-per-view for a reason and the UFC is expecting some great things from Viana. So could be wrong in this spot. But, I mean, from what I've seen so far, it's hard not to pick Aldrich.
Yeah, and I'm going to side with Aldrich as well. That being said, there is some concern because Aldrich has had some issues on the ground. Now, when she's being offensive on the ground, she's great. Like, in her last fight, she got a takedown and a guard pass against Danielle Taylor. But she also had a big size advantage in that fight, and she really bullied Taylor. But in her UFC debut, Aldrich got taken down 4 times, and she ended up losing a pretty one-sided unanimous decision against Juliana Lima. Now, the difference here, though, is Pollyanna Viana does not have Lima's wrestling ability. She is Viana is more somebody that wants to kind of close the distance, wrap you up, drag you to the floor, use trips, maybe try some judo tosses, some hip tosses, things like that. She's not really the shoot-in for a double leg, and I think those are the biggest threats to Aldrich, somebody that can more effectively use athleticism to take you down. But Viana, if she does get this to the floor, she could have an advantage. She could win a decision here if she's able to secure top position, even if she doesn't get a submission. So I do think that she does have another path to victory besides just tapping Aldrich out, but it's still not going to be in a walk in the park. I mean, Aldrich has gotten better and better every time we've seen her so far inside the octagon. I think she had a little bit of UFC jitters when she first debuted, but The last time out against Taylor, she looked dynamic. She looked excellent. I mean, she pushed a good pace on the feet, and she is a talented striker. So against Vienna, Aldridge is clearly going to get the better of the striking exchanges. And as long as she doesn't allow Vienna to close the distance and wrap her up and drag her to the floor, then Aldridge is just going to continue to land strikes and pepper Vienna while Vienna just gets flustered on the feet. So unless Vienna is able to get this fight to the floor, I think that she's in trouble. So I'm going to side with AJ Aldridge as well. I think that she probably wins a one-sided decision as long as she stays upright. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Cub Swanson, who is 25-8, taking on Hinato Moicano, who is 12-1-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Moicano open -165, the comeback on Swanson at +125. Here we go for all of you guys that hopped on that -165 Moicano line. All big smiles right now because the line currently is Moicano -360, the comeback on Swanson at +270. Good take, needless to say, on Moicano. Regardless of how this fight ends up, you guys definitely got the best of that line. It was definitely a low opener. I mean, I understand Swanson's a very popular fighter. So at times with guys like Swanson, it's hard to gauge the proper opening line. But stylistically, this is such a rough fight for Cub Swanson. I really don't know where he wins his fight, honestly. Maybe he can have some success on the feet here. Cub Swanson's a very complete fighter. I know he's been one of the best, obviously, at 145 pounds for many years. And it's because he's such a complete fighter. He's got knockout power on the feet. He's a warrior. He has a good ground game. He has pretty good wrestling in most cases as well. So he just has it all. I mean, and he's got that experience and high fight IQ as well. But stylistically here, is he the better submission fighter over Moicano? No, I don't think that's the case. I think Moicano is the better submission artist here. Is Swanson the better pure striker? I don't think that's the case either. Moicano is going to have some length, even though Swanson could have a little bit of speed. And man, does he have just some blistering knockout power when it does land. Swanson can have at times, but I think Moicano's still the better overall striker in this matchup as well, and he's going to be a little bit longer. So the wrestling aspect of things, I think Moicano actually gets a check mark there. Swanson, again, has some wrestling, has some decent takedown defense, but he has been exposed on the ground by more dominant grapplers and more capable wrestlers. So I think Moicano just checks the boxes in every area. So I'm not saying Swanson can't win this fight, but I think it's going to be an uphill battle. And the momentum right now that Moicano has on his side, man, I mean, it's been awesome to watch him kind of get to this point because I think he's a legit threat for the featherweight title, honestly. So he's in the mix for sure, and a win over Swanson just keeps him in line for that eventual title shot. And Moicano could be wearing that strap eventually in the UFC. His win over Qatar in his last fight, I mean, against a striker that a lot of people thought would outstrike Moicano, I mean, he's proven that he can hang with strikers. Look what he did to Jeremy Stephens a couple fights before that as well. So the only setback Moicano has is getting caught up in that Ortega guillotine choke. And is that necessarily a very bad loss? Not really, because we've seen Ortega do that time and time again. Now, again, I was surprised that he did catch Moicano, Ortega did, but that shows you how good Ortega is in that position. So outside of that blemish, man, Moicano's been legit, and he's only getting better, more confident. It's scary. It's a scary spot. I think he probably finishes Swanson in this fight before it ends up going to the scorecards. Now, that's a big thing to say because, I mean, it is tough for guys to finish Swanson, but I think Moicano has all the makings of either submitting him on the ground or possibly, you know, getting top position and pounding him out here as well. So my pick is Moicano. I think he's going to look, it'll be close at first, but eventually he'll pull away and make it look like a really solid win on his resume. So the pick is Moicano to continue his role.
And I completely side with Moicano as well. Cub Swanson is a talented fighter, and we've seen him have some tremendous fights throughout his career, but I think at this time, it seems like it's finally starting to catch up to him. Now, granted, he's not getting destroyed by fighters that are lower tier. I mean, he lost to Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega, two of the best featherweights in the world. So I'm not going to hold that against him too bad, but I do think that Hinato Moicano might be one of the best featherweights in the world. I mean, this guy has been tremendous. He was one stupid takedown attempt away from being the only guy to defeat Brian Ortega. I mean, he was clearly winning that fight, and all he had to do was not get finished in the third round, and he was going to win it, and he got finished in the third round by submission. Moicano actually has a tremendous submission game himself. I mean, he is a very talented grappler, pulled off a submission in his UFC debut, but what's really developed has been his striking. I mean, his last fight, he took on Calvin Kattar, and Kattar has been one of the most intriguing strikers in the UFC since he debuted and was smashing people, and he looked like a guy that could be a serious player in the featherweight division, and Moicano just obliterated him on the feet. I mean, he made him look like he didn't belong in the UFC. It was that impressive. Moicano outlanded him almost 3-1 in the stand-up, and Kattar is an excellent counter-striker, and he could do nothing in that fight. Like, that's how good Moicano was in his last contest. And while Cub Swanson is a savvy veteran and a guy with a lot of power in his hands, so is Jeremy Stephens, and Moicano was able to outpoint him, and that was a couple, you know, that was three fights ago. Moicano has developed so much more since then. If Moicano rematched Stephens, it would be a lot more of a one-sided matchup, in my opinion. So I really think that Renato Moicano is a legitimate contender in the featherweight division, and while Cub Swanson is a player as well, he's more of a gatekeeper for the elite of the elite. And I think Moicano is potentially one of the elite players in the featherweight division. And I think he gets the job done. I think he outstrikes Swanson. I think he outgrapples Swanson if it goes to the floor. The only thing I'm worried about is Swanson does have some pretty good power. Maybe he connects with something nasty, but I think Moicano's defense is good enough. I mean, he has 70% striking defense. That's ridiculous. So I think his striking defense is good enough to avoid that as well. So I'm going to side with Renato Moicano. I think he gets the job done either by finish or decision. I think it can be one-sided here. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a flyweight title rematch between champion Demetrius Johnson, who is 27-2-1, and Henry Cejudo, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
DJ, Demetrius Johnson, open minus 475. The comeback on Cejudo at plus 325. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is minus 560 for Johnson. The comeback is plus 385 for Cejudo. So minus 475 was not quite enough. I mean, the line got bet up there. I mean, you're talking about the best fighter of all time, in my opinion, in Demetrius Johnson. He is the best pound for pound. I've never seen anybody more complete, more dominating in my life. I mean, I know a lot of people will say John Jones is the best fighter they've ever seen. And, you know, it's hard to argue. It's like 1A, 1B type of situation there. Of course, you could throw GSP, Anderson Silva in the mix. All those guys are studs. But for me, Demetrius Johnson is it. I mean, he's definitely the GOAT in my opinion. Even with a loss here, I think he still maintains that, obviously. And I think I'm saying even with a loss here because I don't really agree with where the odds are right now. I know that Mighty Mouse, Demetrius Johnson, did blow through Cejudo in the first fight. I mean, I think it lasted like half a round if he was able to get him out of there with those brutal knees from the clinch. I mean, that was a thing of beauty. Demetrius Johnson just never seems to surprise us with what he's able to do. I mean, it's always something, or I should say he does surprise us because, you know, I mean, we hold him in such high regards. And then all of a sudden the guy submits people that you don't think he's going to submit, or he knocks people out. You don't think he's going to knock out. He's just a special fighter for sure. So with all that said, I do think that this go around is going to be a little bit different. I mean, Cejudo has gotten a lot better. If you look at his performances after the loss to actually Demetrius Johnson, I mean, the guy had that setback to Joseph Benavidez, but that was a split decision fight that realistically went his way. And to me, that was the fight that actually turned the corner for Cejudo. I always thought he was honestly underperforming up until that time. So even to the Demetrius Johnson fight, when Mighty Mouse got rid of him so quick, I wasn't even that shocked. I thought, okay, he's always been a bit overrated. The public just kind of put him on this pedestal that I didn't think was justified. But again, the Joseph Benavidez fight for me started changing my mind because he looked so good in that fight. And Benavidez at that time, especially, was definitely one of the better flyweights in the world. He still is, but you know what I'm talking about. So with that said, he goes out there and dominates Wilson Hayes, and then his win over Pettis, Sergio Pettis, with the improvements that we just saw Pettis having in his fight with Benavidez. I mean, he's looked great in doing so. So in my opinion, Cejudo has never been better mentally, physically, he knows what to watch out for now a little bit. I mean, it's not going to be the same. Obviously, it's not going to play out the same way, but he knows he has to be careful for knees and a clinch against Demetrius Johnson. I think wrestling is going to be interesting here, obviously, because with Cejudo's background, he should have a wrestling edge, but it's going to probably stay upright. And if it does stay upright, obviously Johnson's going to be the quicker fighter. Johnson is the more diverse striker. So it's hard to pick against Mighty Mouse in this spot here. But I do think if it hits the scorecards this time, it'll be a very competitive decision. It'll be a lot closer than what people are thinking it's going to be here. And if there's a finish, obviously you got to side with maybe Demetrius Johnson, possibly by sub. I think Cejudo's tough enough. And again, he learns from his mistakes well enough. I mean, he's a special athlete in his own right as well. I don't think we see Johnson finishing Cejudo on the feet this time. If anything, it might be a scramble on the ground or something that Johnson matches him with. So I think ultimately it probably goes pretty far, hits the scorecards, and we see a very tight competitive decision. And if that's the case, like I said, with the state of MMA judging these days, who knows which way it's going to go. That's how competitive I think Cejudo can be with Demetrius Johnson. So needless to say, I think the line's a little bit too high. I think their opener was actually a little bit more appropriately set. So where it's at right now, I think it's a dog or pass situation. Cejudo probably has a little bit of value there. And I'm saying that after I just told you guys, I think the GOAT is Demetrius Johnson. So with that said, I'm expecting a really close competitive fight. I'm going to pick Demetrius Johnson to win, but man, eventually this guy has to lose to an elite level fighter. And I think that elite level fighter is a guy like Cejudo. So maybe it's Cejudo's time to reign. Again, not a confident pick. And I can't believe saying that because in most cases, you know, picking Demetrius Johnson, you can't have some confidence in that. But I think this is going to be an interesting fight. I think Cejudo's ready for the rematch and we'll see how it plays out. So the pick, I'm not going to pick against Demetrius Johnson until proven otherwise. So it's going to be Mighty Mouse for the pick.
I agree that eventually Demetrius Johnson has to lose again, but I just don't think this will be the time. I mean, and Henry Cejudo has a legitimate claim to being able to beat him. I mean, Cejudo, after that loss to Johnson, has looked so much better. I mean, you mentioned it. He had Joseph Benavidez in a lot of trouble in that really featured bout. And even though he lost a split decision, I mean, I thought he looked amazing in that fight. And then since then, he's actually showcased both things that could potentially help him beat Demetrius Johnson. He knocked out Wilson Hayes. I mean, he looked really good. His hands looked crisp. He had power. He had confidence. Just destroyed Wilson Hayes and put him away, earning a TKO victory. And then followed that up against one of the best contenders in the flyweight division right now in Sergio Pettis. Pettis is actually just beat Joseph Benavidez and is a top five guy in the division. And Cejudo just used his wrestling and was stifling. Got three takedowns, dominated the fight. Pettis never really was a factor in that contest. So, and if Cejudo is going to be able to beat Demetrius Johnson, he has to trust in the power of his hands and he has to get takedowns and secure top position and try to keep Demetrius Johnson down, which has been very difficult for pretty much anybody to do. But if anybody could do it, maybe Henry Cejudo is the guy to do it. That being said, Demetrius Johnson, I have him ranked as the best fighter in the world, pound for pound. I mean, he is so well-rounded. He is talented in open space with a very diverse attack. He can sit down on his punches and knock you out. He can wrestle. He can scramble. He has tremendous submission ability. He can, I mean, look what he did in that last fight where he suplexed into an armbar. I mean, that was one of the craziest finishes I've ever seen in my entire life. One of the best submissions of all time. And then that doesn't even factor in how Demetrius Johnson beat Henry Cejudo in his last fight. He closed the distance and used his dirty boxing and knees. I mean, Demetrius Johnson has some of the best inside clinch work of any fighter in MMA. When this guy is right inside on you along the fence, he can land knees, he can land elbows. He does work on the inside better than just about anybody I've ever seen. He finds angles. No place is safe against Demetrius Johnson because he is so well-rounded and so dangerous. So, and that's why it's so tough to pick against him. Even though Cejudo is way better than he was the last time, it's probably still not going to be enough. Unless he's able to clip Johnson or unless he's able to repeatedly take Johnson down and keep him down, which no one has really been able to do since Johnson fought Ian McCall what feels like a life ago in their initial fight. I have to side with Demetrius Johnson. He is too talented, and I just don't think that Cejudo is going to be the one to stop him. So my pick is Demetrius Johnson. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening. It is a rematch for the UFC bantamweight title between current champion, two-time champion, TJ Dillashaw, who is 16-3, and he's taking on Cody Garbrandt, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Dillashaw open -135, the comeback on Garbrandt -105, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it's -125 Dillashaw, -105 for Garbrandt. So line margins have tightened up, and there has been a lot of two-way action coming out of this fight. It's been out a while, and we've seen it flip to a pick, flip to Garbrandt, flip back to TJ. So again, a ton of action coming into this fight, and it'll continue to do so because you have two of the best bantamweights, the last two champions, obviously UFC, going at it again. In a deserving rematch. I mean, controversial as it is, I thought TJ Dillashaw should have got a rematch against Cruz a while back though as well, right away. So that being said, man, what could you expect here? Fireworks. I mean, both these guys again are two of the best at bantamweight for a reason. They both have great wrestling backgrounds, obviously former training partners. The rivalry in itself makes this fight just so good. I mean, these guys truly do not like each other. And it's, again, they have a lot of experience training with each other. They know each other's games relatively well. A lot mirrors each other here. I mean, like I said, I started explaining the wrestling backgrounds that they have, but these guys both like to stand and bang more so than anything else. So that's why you have explosive athletes that have punching power and the ability to finish. Dillashaw, to me, is still a little bit more of the complete fighter. I mean, Garbrandt's takedown defense has been top-notch. We haven't seen him have to defend on the ground all that often. We haven't had to see him in problems on the ground because his takedown defense has held up that good. And typically speaking, Garbrandt is the type of fighter that keeps it upright and then just destroys his opponents as well. So that's the kind of knockout power he does have. So that's what he's going to look to do here as well. He's going to have to get in another firefight with Dillashaw. I mean, these guys, that's the thing here. I mean, there's no other way. These guys are going to be thrown down. They're going to be throwing hard leather. It's going to stay upright for the most part. And they're going to have to clip each other, and the winner is going to be the person who survives. So I think it's going to be like that again. I actually think Dillashaw is a little bit more complete because I think he's probably obviously has the wrestling edge, but he's probably the better overall ground fighter as well with his jiu-jitsu game. I think he has the ability to finish and submit Garbrandt on the ground. I don't think Garbrandt would go after a submission against Dillashaw. I think if he got the opportunity on the ground, it would be ground and pound or let him back up to finish him off more so than anything. So Dillashaw has some advantages in this fight overall. I think defensively he might be a little bit more sound as well, although it's pretty close. I mean, both these guys definitely have decent defense, but they have been let punches get through and have been hurt by punches in the past as well. So it's going to see, like I said, it comes down to who lands first. I think, in my opinion, it's Dillashaw. I trust Dillashaw's chin a little bit better as well. And I just think he is just a little bit better of a fighter, of a complete fighter than Garbrandt is at this point. He's just proven to me thus far that he is just a little bit above Garbrandt in this spot right now. But again, I could be wrong, and it all takes one punch for Garbrandt to get the job done. And obviously Garbrandt is just a special fighter in his own right. So this is should be fight of the night. I'm looking forward to this probably more so than any fight on the card because you have two true champions going out of here that is just, I mean, worthy of a headlining fight for sure. There's no doubt about it. So all of us have been looking forward to this fight. We're finally going to see it. And I think what we're going to see is probably a repeat performance of the last fight. It might play out a little bit longer. Obviously, these guys are going to have to respect each other. They know they're capable of finishing each other. But I do think that eventually it comes to a point where Dillashaw does end up getting the best of Garbrandt and he finishes him, whether it's by knockout or maybe stuns him and then finishes him by sub on the ground. I think it's Dillashaw probably inside the distance before it hits the scorecards. If it does hit the cards, I still think Dillashaw does enough to just edge out Garbrandt on the cards as well. So the pick is Dillashaw to maintain and retain, and still, I should say, bantamweight champion of the UFC, TJ Dillashaw.
This is a very evenly matched title fight. Both guys have power. Both guys are talented strikers. Both guys are unorthodox strikers. Both fighters have a little bit of wrestling ability, although I would favor Dillashaw in that department due to being a little bit more seasoned and coming from a stronger background collegiately. Dillashaw also has the better submission game, although we really haven't seen his wrestling or submissions that much, except the fight against John Lineker. So in this fight, I think it'll probably be similar to the last one. I mean, both guys also have a little bit of a chin issue. So, and with both being extremely powerful, then there's the possibility that either guy could win this fight at any given moment. I mean, you just remember how the last fight played out. Cody Garbrandt rocked Dillashaw badly in the first round, couldn't put him away, and then Dillashaw bounces back and then hurts Garbrandt and does put him away in the second round. So it might not be who lands first, it's just who lands the most effective strike at the most opportunistic moment and goes for the finish. I do think that this fight will be finished probably by knockout, although, as Nick mentioned, if Dillashaw hurts Garbrandt, he has a few more options because he does have a tremendous rear naked choke. That's actually how he won most of his initial UFC fights. He would use his wrestling and he would hurt people and then he would choke them out. And Garbrandt, he's pretty much been all about the boxing the whole time. And that being said, Dillashaw doesn't just have good boxing. He also has a pretty strong kicking game, pretty nasty head kicks. He has finished multiple fights and hurt several opponents with head kicks. So that's something that Garbrandt is really going to have to be careful about, because Garbrandt primarily is boxing only, and Dillashaw is able to mix it up a little bit more. So with that being said, I'm going to side with Dillashaw. I do think that Garbrandt has the ability to hurt Dillashaw and potentially win, but Dillashaw does have a few more weapons, and I think that he might be able to land that head kick again, and if it doesn't work out there, he might try to get this fight to the floor, where I think he does have an edge as well. So my pick is going to be TJ Dillashaw. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 227. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post it first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.